You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You can help decide who made this week's Allstate Good Hands Play of the Game. You can win an autographed pair of gloves from the winning player. Cast your vote right now at ClevelandBrowns.com, and good luck. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm, Joe Jervis, continuing to break down the Browns' loss to the Houston Texans. And to me, you know, offensively, we talked about the woes. No, the ground game was not established successfully for the entirety of the game. Brian Hoyer was under pressure, and when he's under pressure, he completes 36% of his passes. That's second worst in the NFL compared with a guy like Ben Roethlisberger, who leads the league at 71%. The average is right around 50, but when under pressure, as we said, 16 dropbacks, 2 sacks, 2 completions on the other 14, you just can't get it done. That's why they're 3 of 15 on third down. So hopefully they can kind of regroup, get this line back together, and clearly the loss of Alex Mack is a huge one. And we're talking about an offense right now that is without 3 of the 4 Pro Bowlers from last season on the offensive side of the ball, and Matt Gordon and Cameron. Now, hopefully, Gordon and Cameron can come back.
They do. They'd be a huge addition, and again, for many reasons, and I know Joe and I are just talking in the break about, you know, the Josh Gordon capability and what he can do to take a top off of a defense, and also, too, to make him a go-to wide receiver to make those big plays on third down, and also, too, his size is a factor. And the one thing, too, that I think I didn't see enough of yesterday when we knew that a front was going to give us both blitzes and the ability to rush 4 and 3.
And still
be effective, is I don't think we as an offense gave them enough credit by keeping in the proper amount. If we knew Batonio, Greco, Schwartz, whoever it was blocking that front would struggle, I think you sacrifice and run some three-man routes, or you have a tight end chip out or running back chip out, but guarantee a pocket for Brian Hoyer, who, as we know, struggles, you know, with his accuracy and struggles under pressure. I thought we could have done more to protect him early, you know, early in the pocket to allow him to get through his reads, even if it's only 3, or even, again, when you see that type of pressure, we didn't see the check down, you know. It's, you know,
2 of them to Crow for 30 yards. That was it.
Right, but they were late in the football game. But yep, that's something that I would have liked to see. You know, I think Crow could have gone for 5 for 60, you know, in some of those situations, as opposed to forcing the football or overthrowing because you had nowhere to go with the football.
Brian is a quarterback we just talked about, not a very accurate quarterback. And the statistics show that. But when you have a guy like Josh Gordon coming back, a big receiver, again, we know he can take the top off. When it comes to bodying up and catching back shoulders, throws, or just competing for a ball in a tight situation or a tight window, that's going to help us out this week. And I would imagine that Brian's probably pretty excited. And I would imagine that Josh Gordon was probably in here at 12:01 a.m. this morning getting ready to go to work, because he's been sorely missed. He's let the team down for his actions. There's no question about that. So you would hope that he's going to come back here and play with a little bit of attitude and try to get this team back over the top. But when you have a big receiver, it's not only the playmaking capabilities that you get, not, you know, in the red zone, jump ball situations, taking the top off, but the blocking downfield, too. Now you have an imposing figure that can go down there and head up a safety, put his helmet right in the guy's chest, try to knock him down or just body him off, and give our running backs an opportunity at that second level to take what was a 15, 20-yard game and make it the big home run hit.
And Josh's frustration in having to sit out 10 weeks, we hope he exemplifies that in every facet of his football game.
Absolutely.
Not just
right,
running routes, not just catching the football, but take that frustration out on some, again, as you said, in blocking situations as well.
You know what it's the equivalent of? J.J. Watt yesterday, when he made those 2 penalties on special teams, I sat there watching the game going, oh, man, that's not good, because we talked about his energy.
He's gonna
before
make up
the
for
show.
It.
He's going to do something to make up for it, and he did.
He certainly did.
That's what I'm hoping we see with Josh. Like, he's got to make up for it, and we don't have a couple weeks to make up for it. We've got to make up for it this week.
Yes, we do.
That's right. And Atlanta stopped this losing streak, because the Browns have not lost 2 games in a row all season, a trend we hope continues. Let's go to the phones. Derek in Memphis, welcome to CBD. What's up, Derek?
There he is. Derek,
you
there?
Hey, what's going on, Derek?
Hello?
Let's try Anthony in Boardman. What's up, Anthony?
Hey, guys, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Been better.
Good. You know, I tell you, when you're undermanned like the Browns are now, and I guess we are a little undermanned, the one thing for sure is you have to win the coaching battle. And as much as I love Coach Pettine, I really do, I definitely think we lost the coaching battle yesterday. It seemed like we were in a tennis match and they were always serving. We were on our heels the whole time. You know, knowing you have a young quarterback like Mallett, you almost had to know that he was going to get the ball out of his hands very quickly and do these 7 and 8 yard out patterns. Our defensive backs were 12, 13 yards off the receiver. That was just like playing pitch and catch. And honest to God, until you guys just said it, I didn't even know Tom Barumba played yesterday. I was going to ask you if he was out yesterday. I didn't even know he played. He was so absent from everything. I don't know what's going on there, but as much as everybody's calling for Hoyer's head, I know he didn't have a good game, but I just think that their defensive scheme was a lot better than our offensive scheme. They continuously put heat on him, and they know that he's not the best under heat. They also were able to stop the run, which those two things normally don't go hand in hand, but they did yesterday. And it just seemed like we could not adjust to them, and they wanted the game a lot more than we did. I know as you guys being ex-players, that doesn't always make sense, but it just seemed that way from a layperson, that they were a lot more fired up than we were, and we were playing on our heels and couldn't adjust to it.
I agree with you. I mean, 100%. And it's sad to see, as I talked last week, a team from the South who's comfortable in the warm and is accustomed to playing either indoors or in warm temperatures for the most part, come to Cleveland and essentially play a Browns team that looked like they never got warm or into any type of flow offensively, defensively, special teams. And it looked like the cold affected them, you know, dropping some passes. And I talk about it a lot. I talk about it with both, you know, Brian Hoyer after a loss. And that's something I look to talk about, you know, as we get into the Atlanta Falcons. But I expect Ryan Mallett to throw, be under control, and to be poised and give him those confidence-boosting completions that allow the chains to be moved. Because the last thing you want to do with a quarterback playing for the first time is go three and out, or three and out, or a drive gets stalled out. So they wanted to give him confidence. And I think that, you know, Hopkins and Johnson gave him their best opportunity. They fought hard for the football. And for whatever reason, we kept that cushion, and they took advantage of it throughout the game.
I want to touch on the coaching situation. If you look at Bill O'Brien, and again, me being a former Penn Stater, I give Bill O'Brien all the credit in the world for getting Penn State to the level that they're at right now. But what I want to talk about is Bill O'Brien coached Matt McGloin. I remember going to a game a couple years ago. Matt McGloin, to me, looked like a walk-on quarterback, and he was. He played like it. Bill O'Brien comes in, and all of a sudden you see this guy's footwork, stepping up in the pocket, moving his feet, doing everything. He looked like a professional quarterback, and he gets drafted by the Oakland Raiders.
That's right.
I think Bill O'Brien is probably the next quarterback guru, probably along the lines of what Kyle Shanahan is or is going to be very, very soon. But if you look at what Bill O'Brien's been able to do, I think he is an outstanding coach, and I think he coached really well. I want to talk about Romeo Crennel. Romeo Crennel, obviously a lot of people here didn't like Romeo Crennel, but Romeo Crennel's credentials, when you look at some of the players that Romeo's coached, from Brewskis to the Harrisons to the Vrabels, all the way down to the Lawrence Taylors and Marshalls of the world with the New York Giants, the guy knows how to play. And then you throw into the mix of Mike Vrabel, Mike Vrabel who's been there and done it. Players are going to listen to Mike Vrabel because one reason, he's been there and he's done it. So I think from a coaching standpoint, Houston had some really, really good coaches, and those guys bought into what those guys were preaching.
When you talk about coaching, though, obviously that's the schemes, et cetera, but the motivation, because this is a Browns team now that has come off its two biggest wins and then been flat the next week. It's a Browns team that's come off its three biggest layoffs of the year, the bye week, the season opener, and now this game, and been flat. What can a coach do? Is that, I mean, at some point, they don't play. They're not on the field. They're not, you know, what can a coach do to make sure that doesn't happen?
There's really nothing a coach can do. I mean, they can change the schedule a little bit to change the dynamic and break the monotony that is in-season football.
There's monotony.
But then also, too, I think it's the leaders in this locker room, you know, and the constant cliche of every meeting we start or every practice, it's one of those leaders stepping up and saying, you know what, I'm going to take responsibility for this football team, and I'm going to make this team different. I'm going to make today different. I'm going to make this practice different or feel different, because we're creatures of habit. You go through the motions. You know, Monday we do this, Tuesday I do this, Wednesday I do this. And so it's very monotonous, and whatever you can do, or when you're given a break, and they deserve that break because they're playing good quality football. And Coach Pettine did his very best and what he thought was best for this football team. But it's on the players. A coach can't manufacture any spirit or intensity or drive within these players. Again, this is their profession. And I think that might be something. And we're in the first year of something very special, I believe, here with Coach Mike Pettine that we're getting sprinkles of. And the more that we're around and the more that we win and the more that we have even these types of losses, there's a learning process that we have to go through to be great. And right now, we're good. And we're average, and we're beating average football teams. But when we hit adversity or we play a good football team, we still crumble. And when we step up to those challenges more time than not is when we'll get to where we want to go.
I think coaches can do one thing, and again, that's change the schedule. When you start to get past that halfway point in the season, man, that's a long, long season. And especially when you're a rookie, when you come in there, you play 11 games in college football, a bowl game. You know, now here in
they're hitting that wall.
You've got four preseason games, right? That's four preseason. Then you get the halfway point. That's 12 games you've played already. That's already a college season. Then you realize you've got eight more games to go to finish the regular season out. I mean, it's a long, long season. So I think Coach Pettine does a great job of trying to change it and get rid of that monotony, being able to get the guys off their feet a little bit faster, knowing that we've got the injuries mounting. I think this is probably the point when you see the pads come off a little bit more and you go into it becomes timing issues. You got to start taking care of your players, and he's done all that. But you're right. A lot of the players on this roster, with the exception of the veterans that have come in from other places that have been around winning programs, the younger guys that have not been around those winning programs don't know what the adversity is like and how to handle it or how to conquer it. So they've got to figure that out. They've got to figure it out. If the veterans can't talk about it or the younger guys won't listen, they've got to figure it out here. So we've got adversity we're facing, but you're right. Somebody's got to step up in that locker room. Somebody's got to do the little things right now, especially at this point in the season, to not let everybody be demoralized and realize, guys, we're still in the hunt on this thing. We're a game out of first place, and we got a log jam going right
That's
now.
That's so true. And you talk about those contributors. You look at Batonio, full-time contributor, Crowell, 50-plus percent contributor, Gabriel, 50-plus percent rep contributor, Agnew. You got T. West, 50-plus percent, and Kirksey now, who's going to have
K-1.
A full-time, and K-1, you know, all in essentially 50% of reps or more contributors to this football team, and those are the guys that we're going to rely on. As we said, as we get thinner and those injuries mount, again, we're going to see a heck of a lot of Chris Kirksey now starting a lot of football games.
Yeah, if Carlos Dansby is out for any extended period of time, that's what we will see, and it's tough because he's also a big-time leader in this locker room, so we'll keep you updated on that as we get it, but I imagine Mike Pettine will share the news today or as the week goes on. I think he's getting an MRI. Not sure what the latest is on Dansby there. No, he left the game and was unable to return with that knee injury yesterday. Let's get one more quick call in here before we get the roundtable with Jim Donovan and Kevin Jones. Derek in Memphis is back with us. What's up, Derek?
Hi, guys. Sorry I missed you last time.
That's all right. How are you doing?
I actually have a third comment, but I had a question about our defensive scheme. I've been to five games this year. I went to Washington, went to Nashville, went to Cleveland for the Pittsburgh game, went to Jacksonville, and I went to Cincinnati. And as bad as I feel about this game yesterday, and I'm not a cheerleader, if anybody was at the Nashville game and heard me talking to that football team in the first half, they would know I'm not a cheerleader. There were four plays in that game. If they'd have gone differently, we'd have won yesterday. If we wouldn't have had a blocker on a kickoff team grab a defender by the arm and run with him for 15 yards, we'd have had a touchdown. If we wouldn't have had an official step in front of Kirksey, breaking on the ball to make an interception,
I think he would have got. He would at least would have gotten his hands on that one.
That's
I agree
right.
With
they
that.
Would not have scored a touchdown. There was a long pass. It was about at the Browns 30, and Hawkins went up with a defender, and they bumped each other, and the ball popped in the air, and Benjamin was a half a step away from catching that ball with a clear path to the end zone. And if Crowell wouldn't have fumbled that football, we might have gotten a field goal. Could have gotten a touchdown. Might have gotten a field goal. We'd be talking about a victory today over four plays. So I'm not going to get so despondent about the way they played yesterday, knowing that I'm just four bad breaks from a victory.
I think every team could do that in every game. But I do feel like it was a game, though, where the Browns were given opportunities to get back into the game and didn't capitalize on any of them.
No, and I think you're right about the fact that you can look at a game and decipher it and say, you know, there's swings that can go one way or breaks that you can have. But we don't want to be a team that has to rely on breaks to win football games, because that is, in my eyes, is not a playoff or winning football team. You look at, we got out physical.
Yep.
We lost the turnover battle.
Yep.
And as you said, third down, or Joe said, you know, third down. We struggled on third down offensively. That is the recipe for losing a football game if I've ever seen one.
213 yards rushing. Mallett was 20 of 30, you know, made really good completions when they needed to be made. He was a leader. Andre Johnson had some big catches, a crucial third down that kept their drive going, or was it fourth down?
Fourth down.
The fourth down that he kept going. So, listen, in every single game, you always have those coulda, woulda, shoulda plays. The point is, they didn't happen. You know, we had to make more plays than just those four or five plays that we're talking about, and those are great, great four or five points. But the moral of the story is they happened. We lost a game, and it's not because of those four or five plays.
And once again, special teams were their ugly head. You have a missed field goal. You have a bad snap. You had a couple bad snaps, but one really bad snap, and Spencer Landing made an unbelievable play just to punt that ball forward. I don't even know how he did that. But, you know, you have the hold on the touchdown, the return touchdown. Again, it was one of those games where offensively they were bad, you know, defensively they were bad, and special teams were bad.
It's the same thing as saying that, you know, J.J. Watt had those two penalties on special teams, and if he didn't have those penalties, they should have won. Well, they did win the game, and he had those two penalties. So every team faces adversity.
Sure.
Every single team faces adversity in a game, and Matt and I have been through those games, and they're not fun. Of course, you know, you're one step away from Travis, and he's right. If Travis is one extra step ahead of where he was at the point, he would have been gone another 50 yards for a touchdown, but they didn't happen. So you've just got to move on, and there were too many bad things that happened in that game for us to win the game.
Yeah, and didn't capitalize, didn't take advantage, and the Browns lost 23-7. We're going to bring in Jim Donovan, the voice of the Browns from the PNC Bank, Cleveland Browns Radio Network, and ClevelandBrowns.com staff writer Kevin Jones next for the Roundtable, brought to you by Blue Point Grill, as we continue to try to make sense of what we saw as the Browns went from the highest of highs against the Cincinnati Bengals to the lowest of lows in this game against the Texans.